Hi, I'm Nito Kitsch, and we've made it to 50 episodes. Oh my god!
Yay!
There is only one movie we figured we could do in celebration, and that is Dream Boy, the worst movie ever. Which means we'll finally find out if it's as bad as I say it is. Oh, okay. That'll be the 100th episode. Tonight we're doing Rocky Horror Picture Show. And because it's the 50th, we invited everyone back, and some of them said yes! So let's welcome tonight's unconventional conventionalists as they share the one thing that will make them stand out in a crowd. First up, she'll have you shiver with It's Amelia!
Hi there, my name's Amelia, and what makes me stand out in crowds is that I absolutely love corporate work meetings. And I can be found as a nefarious navigator on Instagram.
Next up, she's been making me a man with blonde hair in his hand. It's Bobby.
Hello. What makes me an unconventional conventionalist is my decades of Hot Topic tea collections. So many band shirts over so many years.
Next up, he just realized what Hot Patootie is, and it's not a Pixar movie, it's Corey.
Hey, that's me. I'm Corey. What makes me an unconventional conventionalist is absolutely nothing. It'll just be me, just weird, sort of quiet, straight, floppy-haired boy standing in the corner making you wonder, who invited him? Why is he here?
And last, but definitely not least, Patient. It's Ro!
Hi, everybody. My name is Ro, and the only reason I stand out in a crowd is that I'm 6'2", and they've stood me next to the shortest person.
I feel called out.
You can find me on twitch.tv/susqueenro.
Because we're pretty sure you've seen this movie, its sequel, its remake, its tributes, its live version as a fundraiser for the Democratic Party during the 2020 election, its video games, its board game, its card game, its dating game, or any of the other adaptations, I think you get it at this point, chances are that most people in the queer community have seen this movie. But still, for the 3% that haven't, spoilers ahead as we discuss the plot. Brad and Janet are getting married, heading to go see their professor, Dr. Von Scott, to go share the good news when their car breaks down and they have to seek shelter in a castle housing unconventional characters like Magenta, Riff Raff, Columbia, and their leader, Dr. Frankenfurter, during a celebration to reveal the latter's greatest creation, Rocky, a man he created by himself, for himself. Giggity. What follows is a night full of sexual awakenings, betrayal, jealousy, and a fantastic floor show that ends with the deaths of two of the most popular characters in queer and cult fiction. This absurdist adventure is all wrapped up with some of the best musical numbers ever included in a musical, and we get to discuss it tonight! So that's the story. What did all of y'all think?
I love this movie.
Can't go wrong.
I love this movie so much. I have done since I saw it for the first time in high school. I've done shadow casts of this movie. I've watched shadow casts of this movie. About the only thing I haven't done is been in the stage production. And if anybody wants me, just let me know. My schedule is open. I'm still living in pandemic times. I have nothing to do but shows.
What do you think, Bobby?
Oh, I love this movie. I absolutely love this movie. It was part of my queer awakening, I think, as well as a lot of other people's. But yeah, I watch it at least once or twice a year, I think.
And what about you, Corey? Have you had any memorable experiences with this movie?
Well, first off, hot take. Good movie. second off, I do remember a particular experience watching this movie. It was, I was actually one of the first dates with the woman who would end up being my wife. and we were going to go see Rocky Horror Picture Show, and it was a good time, and there was a shadow cast at our college, and then some guy whose name is lost to time immemorial gave me a lap dance, and it was very awkward for all parties involved, seemingly more for him than it was for me.
Sounds like did a real
his,
asshole.
Did his name happen to rhyme with Schmado Schmitch?
I think it did.
The other part of that was the person who was supposed to play Lips dropped out like 2 hours before the show, and the stage manager, who we'll just call Schmidia, to protect their identity, gave me a thong and said, "You have an hour to learn the routine. Go." So that's
if
how
I had a dollar.
I find it fascinating that we have kind of a rainbow of experiences for this movie, from people who have just, you know, seen the movie, people who have seen the Shadowcast version, people that have been in the Shadowcast version. And we can argue what is the correct way to see this movie, but I can't think of any other movies besides the time Corey made me see Avatar 3 different times, where you can see a movie in so many different ways and come away with vastly different experiences.
Oh, yeah, I still see new things every time I watch this movie. The last couple of times I've watched this movie, I've been in very social situations where shouting at the screen and doing callbacks have been very acceptable. So watching it again for this episode was really interesting because I got to kind of sit quietly with it and notice things that I've never noticed before. Like, somehow, fun story, I've been watching this movie for a decade and more, and only just today did I notice that Little Nell's entire tit is out during most of the floor show.
See, that's the first thing I noticed on my first watch.
That's something I still haven't noticed, and now I want to go back and rewatch it.
Oh, yeah, when she does the whole rose tint my world, keep me safe, and she's doing that little shimmy, like, half of her nipple is out. Like, it's amazing. It just goes to show you, like, how exactly gay both Bobby and I are, but in, like, opposite directions.
So my first experience with this movie was with my aunt. I was in high school and going to a film camp at UT Austin, or just, I guess, as my mom would put it, just say UT. So we watched it. There was this lady that will change her name for, you know, to keep their identity. So Heggy, who I played Donkey Konga with, a few times. That's not a euphemism. And so we were watching, we watched Rocky Horror Picture Show over there, with my aunt and Heggy. And I loved it. And she's like, "Do you want to go see it, you know, live with, like, you know, people?" I'm like, "That sounds awesome." And it was like the next day was like when they were performing it. So it was literally, I got to see the movie one day and then got to go see the shadow cast and fell in love with it the next day. And that was just like really like, I was already getting into John Waters at that point. So it's just solidified my love of cult film. Just kind of like, with a 1-2 punch.
Yeah, I have a confession. I still have not seen a shadow cast of this film. And I want to. I just have not managed to do it yet.
Same.
Right?
Actually.
It's such, like, a niche community. Like, you have to be acutely aware that it's happening, like, when and where. It's so, like... And they don't do it everywhere. But, like, it's not hard to find one if you're looking for one. They're widely enough done, but like they're like a really well kept secret that like everybody knows about.
I think the other thing just that I'd like to point out about the Shadowcast specifically is that Shadowcasts like are mainly there for like, you know, callbacks and stuff like that, but no two places really have the same callbacks.
Yeah.
So like my aunt my other aunt, who's like up in the north, like when she came down and saw like a shadow cast, she was like, oh, this isn't what I'm used to at all, kind of thing. And I think it's also like kind of evolved with time, because, you know, more people would go to it and try to be, you know, shocking and funny at the same time. It's probably like the place that I think shock humor has tried to stay alive the most.
Yeah, were people talking during the movie? I never.
Oh my god. if I could go on a tangent on Girl with the Pearl Earring.
Well, I mean, Girl with the Pearl Earring is not the kind of movie, right?
Look, you've never seen Girl with the Pearl Earring.
Interaction.
You've never seen Girl with the Pearl Earring until you've seen it with its proper shadow cast, okay?
Okay, but right, you know what I know what I have seen is The Room.
No. One of my people were talking during a class in college over Girl with the Pearl Earring, and the professor got really angry about it and said, this isn't Rocky Horror. And I think the proper response that we were too, like, that we weren't smart enough to think of is actually, like, play the movie but with an actual shadow cast over it as a response. So someone out there, do a shadow cast of Girl with a Pearl Earring and, you know,
Let us know how it goes. Please. I would love to know. You can tell us at Gay Ekapod on Twitter.
Or Facebook. I've been asked by my lawyer to clarify that even though I did see Avatar 3 times in 3 different ways, they were all the exact same experience to me. And you should only have to watch Avatar once. Moving on.
Straight from your lawyer's mouth, right?
Let it be known, I haven't seen it since theaters.
Has anybody really, though?
I don't know if you all watch How To with John Wilson, but apparently there's a burgeoning community of people who want to learn the language of the Na'vi and live in the Avatar world. So, you know, there's somebody for everybody out there.
That's not surprising, but you know, bless their hearts.
So you say that, but we're going to be sitting here a year from now reeling at the masterpiece that was Avatar 2 when it eventually comes out. And we're just going to eat our words.
I'm not seeing that.
Yeah, you're seeing it 6. In 4D, 120 frames per second glory.
Oh man, I want a 3D version of this. Like the hand scene where Frank extends his like arm to like shake Brad's hand and stuff like that. Imagine that coming at you in 3D.
Hey, for that matter though, like this movie is gorgeous. Can we talk about like this movie is genuinely beautiful?
It has some amazing set design.
It does.
That so, and you know about the Easter eggs, right?
I don't know.
Okay, so the set designers and some of the cast and some of the crew actually hid actual Easter eggs over, like, throughout the set, and you can still see them in the film. So, like, one of the things you can do if you get bored for some reason with the film is actually try to find them while watching the film. I've only found,
like,
two
of them. If you're not, like, too distracted looking at Susan Sarandon or, like... the penis print in Brad Majors' underwear, like,
or just wowed by Tim Curry, like, there are people who are perfectly cast in roles, and then there's Tim Curry as everything,
in like everything.
But it's weird to realize, like, Peter Sushitsky, the guy who shot Rocky Horror, is like David Cronenberg's. He was like David Cronenberg's like go-to guy in like the 80s and 90s. Dude also shot Empire Strikes Back.
Really?
Like, this film is sort of secretly stacked, like, on the technical side, with people who are just amazing at their jobs. Like, the editor, like, I gotta just, you know, far be it from me to be the person on IMDb while recording a podcast, but the editor on this was, like, the guy who edited, like, Don't Look Now and The Man Who Fell to Earth. Like, just, like, a real, like, stodgy, wonderful, artsy, like British editor, and the director, you know, the director is the guy who directed the stage show, but like just a good eye.
It's okay, Corey. We've all been there, and somebody has to do it.
Thank you for volunteering.
Look, I'm trying to make a career out of being the guy who just always has IMDb up on his phone.
So one of the things about this film is that the studio actually didn't want Tim Curry as the lead role, which, looking back, blasphemy.
They were right. The movie bombed.
Okay,
but who would
they have had instead, though?
Well, I was getting to that. If you would be patient. I see you shiver with anticipation.
Oh, Lord.
No.
Get out.
Well, that was the last episode of the podcast, everybody.
Happy 50th, everyone.
We can't end the podcast yet. I haven't come up with an ending line zinger.
So, speaking of The Man Who Fell to Earth, David Bowie was actually in the running for people the studio wanted to star in this movie, along with Mick Jagger, and they also wanted Elvis Presley instead of Meatloaf.
Ew.
Yeah. And I was like, I read that, I was like, Elvis Presley was still alive when this was made?
Actually, though, wait, what?
Okay.
Hey, that being said, like, bisexual Elvis? Hell yeah.
I could see David Bowie possibly doing Frankenfurter, because Bowie already had that kind of like androgynous gender fuck kind of thing going for him. But like Elvis in the 80s, all like fat and old and like,
yeah, I'm not here for that.
And plus that song does not suit his voice at all. You know what I mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to be team pro Elvis on this one, just because as a piece of stunt casting, that is buck wild. But
okay, go ahead. Play devil's advocate. Let's hear it.
I'm the straight white guy on the podcast, so I get to play devil's advocate. It is my God given right.
Well, bless my soul.
Like, I could see, because it is like a very 1950s like bopping kind of song, right? So that might have been the thinking behind. Well, let's get Elvis, or somebody who knew that music.
You know who they could have got?
Right.
That I would totally be like, Meatloaf did an amazing job, has this amazing voice. They could have got Lux Interior from The Cramps, and I would be like, yeah, that's a good replacement. Because he's got like that rockabilly like mentality that's still kind of like sexual and like.
I don't know. There's something so zeitgeisty about Meatloaf. And where he was in the 80s and what kind of music he was making and how that song and that image just fit him to a T. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like the ultimate thing I was trying to get at is like the casting for this is near perfect. I don't think, besides one character that we'll get to, I don't think that I would like really recast any part in this.
Who? Sorry. You broke up when you said that name.
I didn't say a name.
Oh. Well, whatever you said, I would not.
It's a surprise. It's a surprise. Saving for later.
But yeah, like there's some great characters in this. There's some great casting decisions. Even like the unconventional conventionalists, like all have like personality.
They're so distinct looking.
Yeah,
like I had to pause the movie when I was rewatching it today before we started recording to like really kind of absorb everybody who's in the room, because when they introduce you, it's so quick. They like do the zoom out and then they cut immediately to something else, and you really don't get like a good look of them all in the same place. But like, once you, like, even with the short amount of time that they give you, your eye can pick out, like, so many interesting-looking characters. And they're all so distinct from each other, too. Like, everywhere you look on screen, you're kind of seeing something new and interesting.
One thing that I used to do is I used to, like, the first one I would see, I would be like, that's my favorite. And I would look for them, like, throughout the film. And I'd get really excited when I'd see them in the background and stuff. And that was like sort of like my Easter egg hunt. And there's some really, I don't know if you know this, but there's some really great songs in this. Like, musical or not.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree.
I mean, yeah, like, who doesn't love the Time Warp? Anytime I've ever gone to a karaoke night ever in my entire life, somebody sings the Time Warp.
Yeah, we used to play it in pep band in high school. That was, like, every football game, every basketball game, we played the Time Warp.
Wow. It's, like, a good excuse to just get up out of your seat and start dancing. Because yeah. The dance is so simple, and the music kind of moves you. You know what I mean?
I agree.
It's kind of wild, Bobby, that your small town Arkansas band was playing the Time Warp.
Yeah, I was still playing. What is that one song? My Caroline, da da da.
Like, Sweet Caroline.
Sweet Caroline was the height of my band experience.
We had a very subversive band director for like a full 2 years, and then she left, and it made me very sad. But she's the one that introduced the Time Warp and then actually started doing the dance while we were playing it, and then the cheerleaders picked that up. And so it just became a whole thing, and I don't know how many people actually knew what they were doing. or if it was just like, oh, it's a fun thing the band does. I have no idea. But don't worry, we still played, you know, Battlefield of the Republic for every graduation.
Oh, good, good.
I think Rose Tint My World is my favorite. That's my bop. That and Sweet Transvestite.
I'm gonna be a real hipster and say that Superheroes is the best song, and it's annoying that they cut it.
Do expand on that.
Wow, such a hipster take. You must feel so proud of yourself.
I just genuinely like the song. It's a good emotional button. It's got like a great guitar line. I like the sadness of it. It's cool. I like it. I like Superheroes.
I mean, it's not the only song they cut that they filmed either, so
sorry, I watched the UK version of this film that retains it in the final edit.
But you don't but why don't you have like the accent then?
It's so short. Why did they cut it? Do you know?
Yeah, in a movie that's already pretty lean, like.
Yeah, this movie clips by. I noticed on rewatching it this last time. It's like the songs flow so well into each other, and it's shot so that it seems like the set's always moving. You kind of move through the whole movie pretty quickly. Without even really realizing how far you've gotten into the film.
So if I remember correctly, the reason they cut it was because, like, I think the producer, Lou Adler, went to a few showings to kind of see why it wasn't doing so well. And I was like, man, this ending is freaking depressing. Maybe if we cut it down a bit, it will seem more happy and bring in more people to the theater.
I think for my favorite song, It's hard to say, but I think I'm Coming Home is probably the one that's most fun to sing along to, just because it has the background vocals.
I'm gonna be basic as fuck. My favorite one is Touch Me.
Touch
me.
I want to feel dirty.
That is a good one.
So this was, while this was not the first queer cult or midnight film, this was arguably one of the most enduring films. Why do you think the main reason for that is, or could be?
It's a musical. It's a musical. The songs are easy to sing. They stick into your head. It's kind of like, you know, it like, my mother, who grew up in a different era of filmmaking, used to talk about how she would go over and over and over to see The Sound of Music while it was still in theaters. And it's the same kind of thing, you know? It's great music. It's an interesting story. The characters are compelling. And, you know, once you're there, you're having such a good time.
It's memorable. It's such a memorable musical with such catchy songs.
It's a very memorable experience.
I think it helps that it's also in on the joke. Like, it's not a very serious movie.
Oh,
it, like,
right.
Doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah, there are times when the characters, like, look directly at the camera and, like, talk directly to the audience. And it's very tongue-in-cheek, and it also, like, calls back to, like, the Hammer Horror, like, generation and stuff like that. And now it's time for a tangent.
Ah,
everyone
let's
say
go.
Yay.
Yay!
The fact that it's endured for so long also means that some things have changed with our knowledge of queer identities, scientific understanding, and terminology. A good majority of people who identified as transvestites or transsexuals now identify as transgender. But I should mention that not all of them do, and as long as they're respectful of others' identities, you should respect theirs. And with that, we should discuss Richard O'Brien, who created the play, the film, and its sequel. Here at Gayeka, we believe strongly that trans women are women and trans men are men. And we should discuss O'Brien, who identifies as transgender. Specifically, we have to discuss their anti-trans statements, such as saying trans women aren't real women, in the same year that Laverne Cox portrayed Frankenfurter in the TV remake of the movie. So, to be fair, I'm going to read their latest statement in full. I think anybody who decides to take the huge step with a sex change deserves encouragement and a thumbs up. As long as they're happy and fulfilled, I applaud them to their very last day. But you can't ever become a natural woman. I think that's probably where Rowling is coming from. That's as far as I'm going to go because people get upset if I have an opinion that doesn't line up with theirs. They think I'm being mean-spirited and I don't want that at all.
We love a person who tries to disguise their transphobia in well-meaning wishes.
O'Brien has also been open with their struggles with their own sexuality, and their views on sexuality have evolved in the past, so maybe one day that stance will evolve more, but for right now, no.
It is what it is. As far as I'm concerned, all you need to do to feel like a natural woman is listen to Aretha Franklin. That'll
or Carole King.
And maybe some Shania Twain.
Britney Spears.
Or if you want to go, like, really deep cut, Carole King. Like,
I already said Carole King.
Oh, yeah.
I'm being copied.
I'm sorry, Nato, I didn't hear you say it.
So next thing you're going to say is Billy Joel.
Or Billy. Why? Did Billy Joel sing You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman?
Probably.
I would pay for that.
That's the cover I want to hear.
But I mean, like, A, what is a natural woman really? And besides a song by Carole King. And B, like, it's just kind of frustrating that the person who created the play and the film that was probably most people's first, like, queer awakening or, like, has really helped people understand or at least open up to the idea of their own sexuality being so close-minded.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it just goes to show you that kind of limited viewpoints can come from anywhere, even, like, the people who at the time were, like, the most open-minded. Like, some minds, like, they open and then they don't keep opening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, being woke or whatever is... It's kind of like a full-time job. You have to keep learning and keep, like, asking questions and discovering. Because, like, no two people see the world
also
the same way or experience the same way.
I feel like there's also kind of, like, a pick-me aspect to it also. Because you see the same thing, like, you know, across, like, you know, with Latinos. We're like, well, I'm not one of those Latinos. Like, I'm, you know... oh, like, I don't believe in discrimination. Like, you're just being a victim or whatever. And it's like, no, but like, these things actually do happen. And I feel like that's the same read I get on that. It's like, you're kind of being a pick me ass bitch, O'Brien. Like,
oh shit, shots fired. Gay Ecca beefing. We beefing now, folks.
We beefing up with O'Brien. O'Brien,
you know where to find us. Meet us outside Denny's in the parking lot so we can beat your ass.
I would just like to say that we do not believe in violence towards individuals.
For legal purposes, that is definitely a joke.
I wish that was the first time. That. I mean, I wish that was the first time we've said this on this podcast.
I think if you want to like really like punch O'Brien where it hurts, I'd like to share that with you.
Okay.
So, because I felt very conflicted because this is one of my favorite movies and I love going to shadow casts, but like knowing those statements came from its creator, it's just like, I don't want to support that. And then I found out O'Brien most likely doesn't receive any kind of finances or royalties from the movie itself anymore.
Interesting.
You know who does? The Walt Disney Corporation.
That, yep. Okay then.
we'll discuss that another time.
Just Frankenfurter is technically a Disney princess.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I need some Rocky Horror Mouse ears now.
There's mouse ears in this movie.
Rocky Horror, how would you even make Rocky Horror Mouse ears? Put like little corsets on each ear?
No, they have lips instead of the ears. They're just lips.
And instead of like the strap at the bottom of the helmet, it's like a little thong. It just sits at the bottom of the chin.
I love that.
Either that or it's just a giant antenna that says an Archaeo radio picture.
Wouldn't it be really nice if Archaeo owned just, this movie?
That just sticks out of the middle. Like you're ready to receive like
Archaeo should come. Archaeo should come back and Disney should sell them the rights to just this movie. Just for like the lols, you know. But anyway, so to clarify, Richard O'Brien, because the play came before it, Richard O'Brien owns the play and the songs, but 20th Century Fox is listed as the only copyright owners for the film itself. So when he was interviewed about what he thought about the remake, he basically said, I'm not connected with it in any way, so I would say, therefore, I am not qualified to pass comment on it. And it doesn't really sound like something you would say if you're, you know, you have some new form of income that you're trying to promote to get money from. And he also, like, kind of dodged a question that directly asked him if he was getting any kind of royalties from the remake. So
I will say that's probably the most polite thing that he could have said in that situation.
That is, well, that was before the film came out, and then he started bad-mouthing the film, but that's a whole different story for whenever we get to that film. No more complex emotions. Let's just move on. I think this is one of the most accessible movies that makes you feel like it's okay to be queer and find out who you are. For y'all, was this probably your first real sort of, like, introduction to, like, the idea of alternative and fluid, like, sexuality and sex?
It was. But I should also say that I first watched this movie when I was about 8 or 9 years old. So...
Wow, Amelia!
And I would like to just point out that unlike the rhetoric around the Don't Say Gay bill... I did already have, like, you know, little baby crushes or whatever the hell it is you have at 8 years old on women. And, having, like, watching that movie at such a young age and, seeing, like, some kind of representation for queerness just in general or, like, alternative lifestyles, I think was kind of instrumental in like the fact that despite growing up in like a pretty homophobic household, like it wasn't shit. I was just like, y'all are stupid and you're wrong. And I honestly think that without having been exposed to something like Rocky Horror Picture Show at such a young age, like that might not have been like my take on it. I think I would have struggled with, you know, accepting myself a little more, but I didn't. And, you know, I think just having some kind of exposure to that kind of thing early on helped with that.
What about you, Bobby? Because I know you said you watched this probably for the first time around, like, what, high school, did you say?
I think. Yeah, college. Yeah. When I first, it was like my freshman year of college, I think. Back in the olden days when you would go to the Blockbuster.
And I remember those days. Blockbuster.
Yes, a Blockbuster. And I was living on my own for the first time. So I just went and I rented it. I was just curious about it. I'd always heard about it. And I knew, like, I was aware of queerness and queer identities, because in high school I was unbelievably obsessed with Eddie Izzard, but that's a different story. But like I watched it and it was just a very good movie. Like I don't think I was anticipating it to be such a good film. I kind of figured, well, it's kind of like a cult classic, so I don't really know, you know, what I'm in for, but it definitely turned me on to queer cinema for the first time, really. And it was sort of like an opening up, among other things, while I was in college, to like, oh, okay, maybe this is a possibility that people are, you know, gender fluid and sexually fluid. And that's a really fascinating thing. So,
what about you, Corey?
I think I had this.
Well, my experiences as a straight white man are seeing Brad Majors and going, that seems like the kind of guy I want to be. And then watching the rest of the movie and going, all right, sure. All right, sure. but for real, though, I mean,
he's the token straight guy in the movie, right?
Yes, sure, straight.
every group needs, like, a straight on thin ice, right? Isn't that what they say?
Ah, yes. And it's starting to turn spring.
How have I gone this long without never hearing the term straight on thin ice?
Look, you don't waste as much time on, you don't waste as much time as on TikTok as apparently Bobby and I do.
Oh, no, I could stand to waste more time on TikTok, definitely.
I'm writing a dissertation chapter on TikTok memes, so I'm too much time on
that
TikTok.
That is amazing.
Yes, the academic TikTok time waste.
That is amazing. Yeah. I once had to spend
queer memes on TikTok, so now I'm just like,
I once had to spend a bunch of time on Reddit to write a term paper about how incels talked about women on Reddit, so...
No, I think my progression of queer cinema was kind of very similar to Bobby's, where in high school I watched Rocky Horror for the first time, and then about a year after I watched Brokeback Mountain, and then like as I started college, it was like every gay indie movie set in California that I could get my like grubby little paws on.
See, I feel bad because I did that in the opposite direction. I saw Brokeback Mountain first and then Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, there's your problem right there. Corey, would you like me to ruin something for you?
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time.
Okay. So, technically, like, I knew I was attracted to guys at the age of 10. Because I had the biggest crush on Weird Al Yankovic.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
Amazing.
Wait, okay, wait. Everyone, shut up. This is an important question I have to ask right now. Are we talking 1980s poofy hair, mustache, glasses Weird Al? Or are we talking long-haired, running with scissors post that era Weird Al?
The UHF Weird Al show era. What I had a crush on.
Oh my god.
Better vibes.
I love the Weird Al show.
So, but then like.
Wait, why is that ruining something for me though?
Oh, that was a joke. Anyway, so, like, and then, like, in late high school, I got really into John Waters because Hairspray the Musical came out. My aunt, who introduced me to Rocky Horror, was really into that. And then she was like, well, if you like Hairspray, you'll love Pink Flamingos.
If you love drinking a beer, you'll love heroin.
That's like, if you like jumping off the diving board into the pool, you'll love jumping out of a plane and hurtling towards the earth at a bajillion miles a second.
Actually, I'll never forget it.
Into a pit full of sharks.
I wish she was here, because, like, Mel and I used to go to the FYE in Lufkin and just, like, troll every section looking for John Waters movies, because she didn't care about it, but she knew how much I cared about it.
By the way, Mel was supposed to be here, but she had a technical malfunction and had to bail right before we started recording. So I think on behalf of everybody on the podcast, I just want to say we love you, Mel. And
we do. We miss you.
Love you, platonically. So now that this movie is owned by Disney, who is known for basically remaking everything and extending series that are popular, what changes would you want to see or think that will be included when they inevitably get to Rocky Horror again?
I'd say more nudity, but we're talking Disney, so that's never going to happen.
Is Josh Gad going to be in it?
Oh, God.
That seems to be there, too.
Man, I cannot wait for James Corden to play Eddie.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. If James Corden ever gets contracted to do Rocky Horror, I might just die.
Timothy Chalamet as Frankenfurter.
God, yeah.
Probably.
Can he sing?
Chris It'll be directed Evans. By John Favreau.
Chris Evans is John is Brad Majors.
RuPaul is.
Hey, no joke though. Chris Evans is Rocky might not be terrible.
That does bring me back around. I really did not like Rocky.
Oh, because he's a terrible actor.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, he's not even singing the parts. Like, they just, like, He has this dead-eyed, vacant stare.
They overdubbed him.
He's perfect for what he's supposed to be, but the most it doesn't make it better.
The most compelling Rocky moment in the movie is when he's in the elevator with Frankenfurter, and he does, like, that, like, the Japanese wall slam, but instead of doing it with the palm, he, like, flexes his biceps and puts... Like, that was really compelling, but everything other than that, like... He's a terrible dancer. He's a bad actor.
I mean, some of it makes sense because there's a line in the movie itself where it's implied that that they basically cut Eddie's brain in half, and half is still in Eddie, and the other half is in Rocky. So, like, everything you like about Eddie should be the opposite in Rocky, which is why Eddie is very, you know... operatic and theatrical and, like, has, like, a lot of movements, but he's also, like, you know, kind of chubby, and Rocky, on the other hand, doesn't talk so much, and has, like, a really nice body. I think that says more about Frankenfurter than it does about Eddie, to be honest. But yeah, I didn't like the portrayal. I knew that what they were going for, but it just feels like, you know, there was bound to be someone who worked out that could also act, and their name was Tim Curry, which is the story of how Tim Curry actually met Richard O'Brien. Tim Curry was on the way to the gym to work out because he was, like, a struggling actor, and Richard O'Brien asked him if he knew any, like, muscle guys that could sing.
And he was like, wait a second.
So have y'all tried any of the other versions of this movie? Again, there's a remake, there's the two video games, there's the card game, the board game, or even its sequel, Shock Treatment.
First of all, I would love to play the board game if anybody wants to drive to Denver and have a board game night. But no, I've seen the Laverne Cox remake.
I saw that one too, yeah. I had mixed feelings about it. Yeah. It's all right.
I didn't like it as much as the original. I think they could have done better. But it wasn't, like, the worst.
It wasn't Glee.
It wasn't Glee, yes. It's, like, the best musical show ever. What are you talking about?
No, that was Girls. Oh, which I still haven't watched.
Oh, there's also the Drew Carey Show had an episode about Rocky Horror.
And Priscilla at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, which we'll be covering for Pride.
That touchstone of civilization, the Drew Carey Show.
The Drew Carey Show would be remembered as fondly as it deserves to be if it were available to watch literally anywhere.
The Drew Carey Show will always be remembered fondly as the show that employed actors from Whose Line Is It Anyway? The reason Ryan Stiles had a paycheck.
What are you talking about, Corey? It's available on Apple TV for $1.99 each episode.
The first season. Only the first season. I can't find it anywhere. I want the Drew Carey Show.
And Amazon Prime.
I'm sure you could pirate it somewhere on the internet. That is a joke for legal reasons.
And continuing the joke for legal reasons.
You know how hard it's been recently to pirate movies? That is also a joke for legal reasons.
Another joke for legal reasons that private trackers are a joke for legal reasons.
So I guess the final question is, what is your favorite callback or part of this movie?
I'm going to go the basic bitch route again and say, damn it, Janet. I say that in my daily life, in my brain, all the time, anytime I hear the word damn it, so.
I don't know. I think I still love Sweet Transvestite. I watch it on bad days, I think, just like on loop sometimes. It's just one of the catchiest songs, and I love the way it's shot. It's my favorite.
I've got two. One is that Jonathan Adams, the guy who plays Dr. Scott, just everything that he does in the floor show is just like a beautiful commitment to physical acting in a way that is just perfect. And there's two shots in the floor show where it's Frank in the pool, and it's like a really super wide lens, and it's like on him really close, and it's like distorting his face, and it's all gritty. And then it cuts to this like super long lens, like him framed behind light, is just like the most beautiful 1-2 shot of like any like 70s musical, including Cabaret.
As for me, I think at any given moment on any given day, you could just take a cross section of my severely ADHD brain and just see on loop, Janet, Dr. Scott, Janet, Brad, Rocky,
Bullwinkle.
I have quoted way more times than I'd like to admit. He's got more hurt than you've got skirt, baby.
This movie is just so infinitely quotable.
Even the lines not in the movie are quotable. That's how quotable it is.
Also, the call-outs that you would go to the movie theater to yell at the screen are also infinitely quotable. Like, every time I watch the movie, it, like, takes me by surprise, because I haven't been to a shadow casting or a public viewing in a long time. Like, just how many of the call-outs I remember.
Wait, why?
Like, it's like muscle memory. It's like Meatloaf once said in a song, it was so long ago, but it's all coming back to me now.
I remember...
Just like when I watched Fiddler on the Roof.
What are the callbacks like for Fiddler on a Roof?
I have my own callbacks for Fiddler on the Roof.
Yet another reason Amelia and I need to be at the same place at the same time together.
Have fun at Hadestown.
Look, I feel, in terms of shadow casts and callbacks, I feel that the pandemic robbed us of the possibility of that happening with cats, and that just, man, that every day I think about that, and it really bums me out.
I'm still not sure.
I refuse to watch Cats until I can see it in a public setting so that I can make fun of it as I watch it for the first time.
Absolutely.
It is a beautiful disaster.
It is. Oh, it's a massive train wreck, and I cannot wait.
Hashtag Skimbleshanks gang.
All right. Well, let's sum this up once and for all until we get to the remake. Amelia, did this movie teach you how to make a man in 7 days and 6 long nights? Or serve meatloaf for dinner?
Definitely the first one. I don't know anybody that has not seen this movie, but if you are one of those people, definitely go watch it. 1,000%. It is worth it. Especially just in general, yes, just go watch it.
Bobby, does this film tap dance into your heart or remind you that the layout of the house makes absolutely no sense at all?
Tap dancing all the way. Also, I've never really thought about the layout of the house. Now I have a new thing to consider.
I know, right? That's why I watch it.
While we look for Easter eggs.
Corey, does
it
this...
It is, like, that's such a great thing about this movie is it still feels like a stage play sometimes when you're watching it. Because it's that just like, oh, that's good. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's just so good. Yeah, that's all I have to say. Watch it.
Corey, does this film make you feel like a superheroes or remind you to always check the spare tire before leaving on a trip?
You know what? I feel like it rose tints my world and keeps me safe from my trouble and pain.
Ro, are you forever regretful that you didn't get to bask in my performance as Lips and Frankenfurter? Or is your opinion of this movie as cold as meatloaf in the deep freeze?
You know, I actually would have loved to see you as the Lips and as Frankenfurter. Because knowing how uncomfortable you are around, like, large groups of people, I think it would have been, like quality, like, meme potential. You know what I mean?
I actually was pretty, like...
You should have seen him. He was free. In that moment, he was free.
But for real though, this movie is a cult classic for a reason, and if you haven't seen it at this point, like, why? What are you waiting for us to tell you?
And because it's the 50th episode, throwing my hat in the ring, I'm gonna be the outlier and say that I think you should see this movie.
What? No way!
Canceled.
Anyway, that's what we think, but if you've seen this movie or end up watching it later, we'd love to hear your thoughts and your experience with it. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at GayecaPod, that's GayecaPod. While you're there, why not suggest a movie for us to watch in the future? We're always looking for new suggestions, and we can't wait to experience more movies with you. I'm Nino Kitsch. Thank you, everyone that could be here, all of our guests in the past, and please come back for a future episode. Also, whatever you do, don't drink it. Frank peed in it. Later.
Don't look hot and flustered. Use a bit of mustard.
Patient.
By the way, like, what sort of crack was Richard O'Brien on when he wrote that line? What does it even mean?